This is the time when we continue the discussion. And what I wanted to say here is just two slides, and then I'm going to ask Susan to help us to get the discussion. And this is how two slides. One says, what do we use the data for? And then we go to some implications of what will happen on the indicator 13. And then one more step is to agree on some issues we are still not agreeing completely, or we have not provided clear, we have not discussed clearly what it means, for example, what's a work-related case. And provide some experience from other states, so as the who can, who are, see how our practices are going, so we can make what we call the standardized variables. So this is what you know. That's what we use the data to measure national indicators. So your data is very useful to see how well we're working in preventing lead exposures nationwide. And we have all those indicators there. And even now, you use this elevated blood levels as an indicator of success. Are we working well or not? And we say always we do this with state programs. Otherwise, we won't be able to do much of the work we are doing. And the next point is we should do some research. And again, here's just some examples that we use the data for. I think one of the key issues was we were able to get the new reference level, and we are using that. And again, this may change as things are changing and with the CST. And I would like to invite at this time Susan to come and help me for this discussion.
Yes. Okay. So,
I was here, so you.
Okay. Good. the point of me being up here is not at all to like provide you with information. It's rather to solicit your feedback and input. So, if we hear silence, we're going to decide what happens. So, just so you know that. Okay, so just to review, I'm not sure how many of you conduct the indicators, but if you do, the indicator 13 is the prevalence and incidence of elevated blood lead levels. And just to review the variables you need to do that, the blood lead level, the person's ID, so you can pick out the highest, your state, and then the blood lead level itself, and then the status variable, which is the new or existing, using the slightly unusual Abel's old definition of new versus existing. And then you need to include 16 years of age and above. So if you're going to do indicator 13, you need to have all of that information. So we, at this time, the states that do it all present the information at levels of greater than or equal to 40, 25, and 10 micrograms per deciliter. And again, you know, using the only health-based one up there is the 10, which may be changing. But the 25 and I guess the 40 allow you to compare over time, because many states weren't reporting lower levels to NIOSH at the time that the 10 was passed. So we've heard feedback that that's kind of too many levels to calculate. So that's kind of an open question. The people that conduct the indicator, do they have problems calculating all three, or? I quietly heard two no's.
One of the issues is there's calculating at as an inclusive everything greater than 25 versus calculating it as 25 to 39.4. And so there's whether or not one way would be better than the other.
Right. So assuming everyone can do the calculations, that's another question. Either do all three, and they have been all done as sort of 10 and up, including everybody, 25 and up, including everyone, and 40 and up. So perhaps a better way to present the data would be 10 to 24, 25 to 39, and 40 plus, which it sounds like Kathy is in favor, Iowa's in favor of, maybe. Do people have...
We've done it both ways.
Okay. So it would be... Ken?
Yeah, I like that too, but I was going to suggest, unless there's an earthquake between today and Thursday, maybe there will be, it's going to be five.
Correct, yes. And
maybe we should be talking about five instead of ten.
Yeah. We have that up there. Yes. Okay. So I'm sorry. I went with the sort of one or many levels question first and how to do it. So the next big question is we're assuming that the CSTE position statement is going to pass, which considers an elevated blood lead level 5 or greater for an adult. So that's a question. If we are sort of saying elevated, it would be 5 to 9 and then 10 to 24, etc. So do people have reactions to that? Would you be able to calculate?
I have a question.
Yeah.
What level of detail are you wanting on those? Are you wanting the industry?
No, it's the first list that I showed you, so blood lead age. It's, you know, counts by blood lead, basically. Okay. And you need to know that they're adult, which is 16 and up.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're like, he's like, not sure about industry, which
doesn't
play into this.
We aren't either.
One of the issues we're having yet in our crappy database is where if it's a less than, and it just gets dropped for calculation, so all those results that were have been coming in as less than 5, because that was the bottom level
detection.
For the 5 in the lab for a long time, those show up as 5s then.
You mean when you report to NIOSH, or do you mean in your database?
No, well, both. But mainly when we report to NIOSH.
Okay, because we're going to talk about that. That's
because
one of
that would mean all
it's,
of these that are basically norm or not even elevated levels are all.
Yeah, that would be, you know, using 5 as a cutoff for the first time means that because some labs are still using that, it still have that limit of detection that you can't ignore the less than. So that's an issue that we'll discuss in a second. So it sounds like most can provide the 5 and up, not including industry. And then, the 10 can only be compared for sort of the last few years, and then we'll be starting again with sort of looking at 5. So everyone seems in agreement with that. And then what about the sort of everybody or the table that's, you know, everybody's only counted once? Did I say that right? So you could do the ranges or do the single blood lead levels at the various cutoffs. Do people have a preference? Because I'm the state lead, Walter's the national lead for indicator 13, so if nobody says anything, we're going to decide.
Is there guidance for which blood lead level to use if a person has multiples?
The highest during the, that's always, yeah.
And then if they're equal, then you take the first date.
Okay, yeah, I don't know that we've ever
talked.
Yeah. Okay, so...
I think as long as it's very clear, it's always the same, so that people understand that the 40 person is included in the 25 and the 10. It's clear.
I think, to me, it makes more sense almost to use the ranges. It's easier for people to understand, I think. So
question.
Yeah.
Are you using indicator 13? I'm thinking you are producing indicator 13. Now the question is, are you using it for some of your practices, and if you're using, do you think a single level is more useful than 3 or 4 or 5 or a ranges? So I'm assuming that everybody, most of you are using indicator 13, are providing. And now, are you using it, and how are you using that one?
We usually use 2. We don't use the 40 as much anymore. We use the 10 and the 25. But then we only report locally. We only report prevalence. We don't report incidence.
And I think if you had the ranges, you could still do, if somebody needed to see 10 and up, that's easy enough to do. And at some point, I don't know when, but we're going to talk about sort of sub-analyses of Indicator 13, which might make it more useful for some states. Okay. All right, so now I want to switch over to the variables that ABLES would like you to continue providing to Walter. So we've gone over this before, but just to make sure everyone, if hear anything, I'm going to assume you both understood and agree with what I said. So this is just a quick review. Always be sure that you have an ID number that's unique for each person and won't include any personal identifiers. And if you use a relational database and have tables that are linked together, each of those needs their own unique ID system too. So like our employers, our doctors, our labs, each have their own ID system. So just be sure you're able to do that. Okay, so here we might have a little discussion. In some parts, have touched on the whole venous versus capillary issue. NIOSH has not used any capillary samples prior to this, or I'm sorry, will continue not using capillary samples. That's the same thing we do in California. They're all supposed to be repeated by venous sample. I think it's above 6 micrograms. It may be 5, it may be 6. And I do tend to conflate the capillary with the desktop analyzers, and I don't know whether it's a great idea to sort of look like we're supporting the use of those in the workplace environment.
Did he actually pay to help get that instrumentation developed?
Yeah. It's for children.
But that's, we're actually getting more tests.
Yeah.
So for us to say, well, you can't trust that machine, is kind of.
I think
how many people in here are laboratorians and know about whether or not percentages and the precision and the accuracy of the test, what it is and what it's rated at. So to make that decision,
So let's see. Probably the discussion here is if we're going to use capillary, because the Leadcare 2 can be used to test venous, and then, or capillary, right? And then, if it's for venous, there's not that great potential for contamination. So what we were thinking is we would like to have the venous and make it a standard practice as it has been until now, even though it's not written, I don't remember having it seen written in any of our document communication, but I think that was the consensus. I think so. Probably again, capillary for adults, for workers especially, is so far is not a good idea until now. Probably will change. I think I see one study that says if you do a very thorough, complete cleaning of the surface. And it's recommending this particular device that can be close to what you could get with a venous. But I don't know if we can at this moment say let's go ahead and accept capillary sampling. So that's the discussion we have been having.
And I guess my point is not if we want to make it clear that we're only reporting venous to NIOSH, that's not a problem. What I've been saying is that it was not in the contract. Language. We never reported that this is a venous result. So if that is stated, that's fine. The issue is about if a venous is done on, for example, a Leadcare 2, a lot of times you're not even going to know that that was instrumentation. Yeah. So you can't say, well, we're not going to accept Leadcare 2 results.
Right. And as I said, I tend to conflate them a little bit, but the issue is that capillary results taken on an adult, unless they're less than 5, they're going to have to be retested with a venous sample, whether it means on the Leadcare 2 or regular. Yes, correct. I mean, that's why they do the screening, because it hurts them less. And then, So, and I think just in the whole sort of blood-led world, adult blood-led world, I don't think many people have thought other than being a sample. You know, it's not written down, but we could at this point. So I just wanted to...
Or
I think maybe you should include the sample type. That way it's clear. So, because I do send capillaries occasionally. Mm-hmm. If it's an elevated capillary, I mark it in there that it's probably a false positive mm-hmm. in the that extra text field. You know, and I think it would make it more clear. And if you exclude capillaries or you want us to exclude them, make it clear in the variables. I would like to see you go ahead and keep accepting unknown sample types because those should only be less than 10 micrograms. But we get a lot of them for one lab in particular. And yes, Susan, they still report on paper, not a quest. And somebody can fix that, Marie.
Yeah, none of our quests. I mean, they're all electronic.
This is an ongoing fight. It's not just in Missouri. It's not even a Missouri quest.
Yeah.
Well, they need to get on board. But, you know, I mean, of course, if I get hurt a person with a blood lead level and it's 10 or more, I ask, what kind of sample type is this? Let me talk to the phlebotomist to make sure, whatever. And they do that with childhood, too, if it's elevated. But for all of those people that happen to go to their doctor and that doctor uses Quest, we don't know if it's venous or capillary. Mm-hmm. And if they're not elevated, I'm not going to call.
So best solution might be to report the levels, include a sample type where you have it, and let unknown be one of them, and then Walter does the exclusion of the capillary.
No, why? Well, it's easier not to report.
Or tell us to not report capillaries.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's what I vote, but it sounds like I'm hearing some different things. I mean, in California, we get some, we ignore them. You know, we assume that if they're greater than 5, they're going to be retested, and we're going to get that result. So, and it would be too hard, I think, to kind of figure out whether we did or didn't. So, and so we're not going to include sample type.
And
I'm sorry, we are going to include sample type, but you're not going to send capillary.
I think they recommended that to state that it's going to be venous, and we don't receive anything.
Correct. Okay, except you'll include unknowns or allow the unknowns.
Yeah, because there's a lot of them that come in that say unknown, where you kind of assume it's a venous, but...
And not for occupational, but we do use the capillaries on adults because a lot of those are pregnant women being tested.
Yes.
And that way we actually have nurses that not for able, so that they follow up, make sure if it's elevated that pregnant woman goes back and gets
venous.
Okay. So it's not really ABLES, but...
It's not what we report to.
It's an adult.
But it's part of our state.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
I think Michelle
wanted.
So
yes, I'm sorry.
Can you take a vote on that? Because if we add another variable, I've got to get with my people, and we've got to put that variable in the design.
No, we're saying not include sample type, but don't send capillaries to NIOSH, which is, I think, how we've been doing it. Okay, so work relatedness, it's hard to figure that out for all of your results. It's hard for us, and we have a, you know, pretty robust program. So what I'm listing up here is these are just ideas. This is the way California does it. We don't have the resources to call on every 10 and up, much less 5 and up. So we made some assumptions that we consider very safe, and you can see what they are because I know we only have like 4 minutes left. But we also wanted to hear what other states are doing to about the whole issue of determining work relatedness. Are you using other sort of automatic rules? Are you contacting everyone? You know, what other ideas are out there? Because this isn't going to be written up as you have to do it this way. It's just these are examples of how you might be figuring work relatedness.
See, what has happened in the past is we have let the PI or do decide, but there is some turnover, and sometimes come new person and say, well, how I do this? And then I explain our way of doing things. But probably it's best if we have something written. So, well, you know, this is our best practice. So you can read this, and then we can discuss, or we can all call somebody else. So the idea is provided a little bit more guidance, because we have not been, I think since the beginning we have been this open. We have agree that you are going to do the best you can to assign work readiness. But probably we were thinking maybe we can give a little bit more guidance, so for people who are coming new to the program, they can have this as a tool or as a guidance.
Yes, Ken.
So could you explain what two means? It's not clear to me.
Down at the bottom? I'm sorry. That's just our rule that if somebody comes in as a non-occupational person, they are non-occupational forever. So that's an automatic thing that our database does.
Okay.
I think, yes.
And what about the
sick? Okay, this is California. We have regulations that fund our program that are based on, I think it was maybe around 1989, Barbara and some other people did a national query somehow of what are, and at that time everyone was using sick. So at that time, you know, what SIC codes do you see in your state? And the whoever put that together came up with a list of 110 of them. So we double code. We for all of our employers, we have SIC and NAICS because the world is NAICS, but then we still have these regulations that we don't want to sort of call attention to ourselves to try to revise. So we're just going to leave them that way. So if any employers in any of those codes, we assume work relatedness. So that's a, you know, very California thing, except if you want the list, it's, I think it's up on our website. Yes.
So five or more workers is pretty arbitrary.
Oh, totally, totally.
Some other state could use three or more workers.
Exactly.
So
and this was, you know, again, this is what California does. If you do other things, you know,
but if you want to standardize, maybe you need to get a consensus on how many workers, and so everybody's doing the same thing.
But I think we're not trying to standardize this one as much as provide a sort of best practices, which may also need a consensus. So, what do people think?
I think it could maybe go down to two or three.
Within a whole year?
Oh, within a whole year. Is the same business?
Yes.
Is that what your ER is standing for?
Employer. Yes, I'm sorry. If an employer has tested some, and we just chose five over a year, we assume that in some way there's something going on at that employment, at that place of employment, that isn't going on at a bank or a school or could be a school. Sorry, a bank or something else that doesn't use lead. Yes. Yes,
and
yes.
We've long established that there are companies that use lead in their
Yes.
Home. But if there's some new company that shows up, I want to say we call them up or we look at their NAICS code and see if they fit into a list of lead-related.
So that's industry, right? This is just, are they work-related or are they non-OC?
But we're assuming if they work in a lead-related industry,
yes.
Then it's work-related?
Yes, which is, that's what that third rule refers to. We know those are work-related industries, so if you work in one of them, or if we knew before, you know, we don't find out again.
Is that the sick one?
Yeah.
So you've assumed that those were lead.
Correct. And at the time, it was like a national picture of here's the lead exposure situation. So. So industry, we're going to continue using NAICS, but now ask for the year that you're using, because any of those three could be being used by different states. We want NAICS codes on if they're occupational, and what is three, both? If they're both, enter a NAICS code, and then if you have a NAICS code, even for a non-OC, go ahead and provide it, and then is anyone using any other industry coding systems, or does everyone use NAICS?
So NAICS at least.
NAICS. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Well, thank you very much for your participation. We will be contacting you, and please, I think this is open. The way we have been doing this is always we do it together. And if we can propose something, but if you think it's not achievable or it's going to create a burden on you, please let us know, and we will reconsider our approach. And I think we have been doing this since the beginning, and it works fine, and we are happy with that. Thank you very much for your attendance. Thank you very much.